John Kirkpatrick, what kind of a person was he?
John was one of my dearest friends. Of course, he knew Mr. Colcord, and we became friends when the banks merged. I mean, he was absolutely honest. We worked very closely. As a matter of fact, for a period of time, he was chairman of the board, and then I was chairman of the board. We became very close friends because of the bank. And, of course, we had to raise all the money for additional capital, and I did most of that for him. We just became close personal friends. And I'll never forget, his wife died. They were just inseparable, and I never thought John would live long. He's been gone now maybe a year and a half, maybe longer than that. But about a year before he died, I'd go over to the city every couple of months and spend a half a day with him. I'd never done this before. But one day I was over there, and I'd had a couple of very close friends die. Bill Martin, chairman of Phillips, and John Dimers, my Dutch friend, and even Bill Flynn. And I said, John, you know, I've thought about these men I was so close to. I said, I never really told them how I felt about them. And I said, you and I are getting to an age now where something could happen. And I just want you to know how much I respect you and that I love you. And he got up from his chair, came over and hugged me and said, Walt, I love you too. And it was interesting how much difference that made when he died, because I knew he knew about our relationship. I'll tell you one other story about him that was great. When we were trying to raise the money for the merger, I went to Ed Gaylord, who, of course, was the richest guy in Oklahoma City and could have done more for the merge bank than anybody in the city. And I said, Ed, we've got to raise $50 million, and I'd like you to give five of it. That's only 10%, and you're the biggest guy in Oklahoma City, so we need it. We'd spent about an hour. He said, Walt, I'm not going to give you any money. And I said, what are you talking about? He said, for two reasons. He said, one, you've got John Kirkpatrick on your board, and I don't have any respect for him. And second, you'll run it out of Tulsa, and I don't like that. So, no, I'm not going to help you. So we didn't get a dime from him. But we raised all the money. And about 2 years later, he called me. He said, Walt, we're going to have a big capital campaign for the Cowboy Hall of Fame. He said, you're a big shot in Tulsa. I need your help. So he said, I'm calling you for the lead gift. And I said, gee, Ed, I really appreciate you calling. But I said, there are two reasons I can't do it. John Kirkpatrick is on that board, and you're going to run it in Oklahoma City. He said, oh, hell. So, I thought that was fun, though.
And again, when you said the merge bank, that was the two?
Liberty and Tulsa. See, we couldn't have any branch banking in Oklahoma until they passed that law. And within 30 days, another funny thing about that, Dean McGee was a close friend of mine. They had a bank in Oklahoma City. And I called him before I talked to Bill McLean at Liberty and said, Dean, let's put the banks together. It's the first opportunity. He said, Walt, we're good friends, aren't we? And I said, yeah. He said, our bank is in such bad shape, I wouldn't want you to have it. He said, don't even consider it. So we merged with Liberty. A month or two later, Len Eaton was chairman of NBT, Bank of Oklahoma. He merged with Dean's bank, and they lost about $100 million.
So Dean was not as good a friend of Len Eaton.
No, he wasn't as good a friend.
When the banks merged, it became what name?
Liberty, because it was the bigger of the two banks.
So the First National Bank and National Bank of Tulsa
were the only two banks, major banks.
Major.
We had other individual banks, but they couldn't have a branch, and we couldn't either.
So First National Bank of Tulsa, was that a bigger bank than NBT doing bigger business?
They were very similar size.
Oh.
Yeah, just about the same.
And then we know that NBT is now BOK, yeah. Bank of Oklahoma.
You knew that I got Oral Roberts, his first loan.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. He called me one day and he said, Walt, you're a director of First National. I can't get a loan from First or NBT. What's the deal? Up to that time, Oral had been pretty much out of it. He didn't want to be known in Tulsa, but had the school.
In the 60s?
His school had been there about two or three years.
Okay.
And I said, well, Oral, do you know Mr. Bradshaw at NBT? He said, well, yeah, I've met him. And I said, well, let me know if you can have lunch with him. Just call me if you can. So about a week later, he called. This was on a Tuesday. He said, I'm meeting Bob Bradshaw at the bank on Thursday. And I said, okay, fine. So I called Mac McClenick, who was chairman then, and I said, Mac, I don't know what's going on, but Oral's having lunch with Bob Bradshaw Thursday. Mac called him down and gave him his loan.
You sly fox, you.
We were always good friends after that. We did a number of things together. He wanted on the board of First National, and he accumulated stock, pretty large block of stock in the bank, and called me one day and said, Walt, I've got enough stock in the bank that I want on the board, and so I want you to tell him. If you had 1/25th of the stock, because 25 directors, you could vote yourself on in the National Bank. And I said, Oral, you've wasted your time. That applies to national banks, but First National is owned by a holding company, and holding companies don't have that. So you've got a lot of stock, but you don't have any chance of getting on the board. So about a month later, my Dutch friend came over, and I said, I think I could get you a big block of stock if you wanted it. And he bought Oral stock.
So Oral was really a pretty good, astute businessman.
Oh, darn right. Oral could have been a success in any business.